Now, our feature presentation.
This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington. Are you a Meg, a Joe, a Beth, or an Amy? We have author Louisa May Alcott to thank for such a provocative question. Those are the four sisters featured in her semi-autobiographical novel, Little Women, which was published over a century and a half ago. I'm totally an Amy, by the way. We'll get to that. That book has become a mainstay in American literature. And in the late 19th century, it was a rare opportunity for all types of women to see themselves reflected in a literary story. Well, that resonance has continued up until today with the latest film adaptation from director Greta Gerwig. It's left critics and audiences gushing about how much the story means to them. And that includes many of you.
I took my daughter, who's 9 years old, and one of her best friends to see Little Women. We all loved it so much.
I laughed. I cried. I cried. I laughed. I cried. I did it all. They did a wonderful job.
I appreciated the cinematography, the complexity of characters, and the focus on the act of publishing for a woman in the mid-19th century.
They brought a softness to the characters that gave them more dimension, revealing faults and idiosyncrasies as well as noble heroic features.
I feel really grateful to have grown up in a generation where I've seen movies like Little Women that portray female relationships more accurately to what they are in real life.
The theme of taking women seriously couldn't be more timely, and it was presented with passion and integrity.
I really think it's important for young girls to go and see this movie. It's so inspiring.
Just a few of the reviews that you left in our inbox. People really liked this one. For this meeting of the 1A Movie Club, we're discussing the latest adaptation of Little Women. How does the film honor Alcott's semi-autobiographical world and expand upon it? What does Little Women illuminate about who gets to tell stories and who chooses to listen? Kate wrote this to us. I love the book, and for the longest time, I thought I was Joe, refusing to be constrained by what people think women should be. And because of this, I hated Amy. Then I got the chance to see Gerwig's take for the first time, and I realized that Amy has depth. Amy saying, I want to be great or nothing, and breaking down and showing how she sees marriage as a duty. I fell in love with her. That's one take from Kate, and we're going to get a lot more takes, too, from the critics, the experts, and you. Joining me from KPCC is John Horn, officially the vice president of the 1A Movie Club. He's host of The Frame, KPCC's arts and entertainment show. John, welcome back.
Happy to be back. If you are an Amy, I am a Joe.
All right, that's the vote. John's a Joe, Todd's an Amy. So far with us from New Orleans, Anne Boyd Rue, professor. She's an English professor at the University of New Orleans, author of Meg, Joe, Beth, and Amy, The Story of Little Women and Why It Still Matters. Professor Rue, great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me, and I'll give Joe another vote.
Two Joes now. Joining us from NPR in New York is Rachel Handler, staff writer for Vulture. Rachel, welcome.
Hi, I'm very excited to be here. And as the third Joe, we've got some very extreme energy.
Everybody, we got Joe energy. Everybody thinks they're a Joe. And this is a popular review of Little Women. That's what I'm learning. We're going to talk about that, too. Why does everyone think they're a Joe? We're going to be talking about Little Women. Hey, spoilers and all, if you're listening to this, this book is 150 years old. Your claims of no spoilers don't count here. This one's been out for a long time and you've had your chance. So we're going to talk about the book. We're going to talk about the film. But we want to hear your reviews as well. If you've seen the film, how many stars out of five do you give Little Women and why? Maybe you grew up reading Little Women. Did the adaptation do the novel justice? Or, and this is important, maybe you're a dude who didn't expect to connect to this story but did. Tell us about it. We're taking your calls, 855-236-1A1A. You can also comment on our Facebook page. You can tweet us at 1A. Our email, 1A@WAMU.org. John, first you. You've stipulated that you're a Joe, but how many stars do you give the film? What's your review?
I'm also a dude. I'm giving it five. I thought it was a remarkably well-made movie. I thought it preserved a lot of what was integral to the novel. It made it modern without it feeling that it was inauthentic to the story that Louisa May Alcott wrote. And I think most important, we heard it at the beginning. All of those comments were from women. This is a movie that Hollywood typically doesn't make, made by a woman for women, starring women, and I think it's great that it exists, and I think it's great that it has turned out as well as it has.
5 stars from John Horn. Professor Rue, what about you?
Oh, definitely 5 stars. And I've written about the other adaptations of Little Women, and this one really is so faithful to the book. Even though she, you know, changes the chronology around, what she's doing is conveying on film the real heart of the book, which I think has been missed in earlier adaptations. Focusing a lot on the girls' struggles as they grow up, I think, is what really resonates with girls and women today.
Rachel Handler, your review.
I'm going to go ahead and give it a 5-star as well. I really was very moved by it, and I was sort of apprehensive going in because I love the 1994 version so much, and you know, I've seen it twice. I cried hysterically both times. I felt extremely connected to it, and I also think I love the sort of metatextual layers that Greta brings to it. I think that was a really smart and interesting and a really cool way to sort of put her own spin on a story. Like, I think it can exist as its own thing as well as in relation to the other adaptations.
I'm feeling some group pressure here because I was going to give it 4.5 stars only because
no fractions.
Only because 5 stars is so hard to achieve. I mean, 5 stars is reserved for, in my view, the top couple of films of all time. But whether it's 4.5 or 5, I loved this film. I laughed. I had a great time. I teared up at many of the portrayals. I was thrown by some of the performances, by the way, from an actress or two that I've never seen before. And I want to talk about a couple of breakout performances as well. Before we do that, Professor Rue, this film adapted Louisa May Alcott's semi-autobiographical novel, Little Women, of course, published over 150 years ago. Tell us a little bit about the author, about Alcott, what she was trying to do when she sat down and wrote this novel.
Well, it's interesting, first of all, to note that she wasn't particularly interested in writing it. It was not her idea. It was her publisher's idea. And she thought, you know, I can't write a girl's book. I never, you know, liked many girls or knew many except for my sisters. And eventually they convinced her to give it a try. And what she ended up producing was really an homage to her family and to her youth and to growing up. And she folded into the book a lot of her own experiences, the experiences of her sisters and their different personalities. And what she really created was remarkable because she translated onto the page these very real girls, herself and her 3 sisters. And that had never been done before in literature. And the reaction to the book when it was first published was just electric because here were girls who were individualized, they had flaws, they were struggling, you know, in various ways, they weren't perfect. And readers had never seen girls like that portrayed in literature. They were always very idealized, or, you know, they were paragons of virtue, or they were so bad they had to be punished and reformed, right? But these girls throughout the book are struggling like real girls did.
Pithy Pants tweets, I'm always curious if anyone had a favorite other than Joe. She was hands down the best. Strong, independent, smart, a writer, a heartbreaker. I remember feeling disappointed when she got married. And yes, I've never wanted to get married, so maybe that stuck with me. And when you talk about Joe in this film, you have to talk about Saoirse Ronan as Joe March talking to her mother. Here's a clip, the mother played by Laura Dern.
I just feel like women, they have minds and they have souls as well as just hearts, and they've got ambition and they've got talent as well as just beauty. And I'm so sick of people saying that love is just all a woman is fit for. I'm so sick of it. But I'm so lonely.
Rachel, what did you think of this performance from Saoirse Ronan?
I mean, I was nervous because I love Winona as Jo in the 1994. She is Jo, but Saoirse really knocked it out of the park, I think. And this speech in particular really, really struck me. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that this speech was in the original or in the 1994 version. And I think it was just incredibly striking and moving. And I don't know. Saoirse as Jo is very different than Winona. I think she's a little bit more. She has various moods where I think the Winona version of Jo is a little bit more intense. But I absolutely loved her.
John Horn, talk about Saoirse Ronan. I want to talk about Meryl Streep energy. I'm watching her move around the screen. I'm watching her wince and whirl as her tortured mind goes through the possibilities and the strictures of her life. And I'm thinking, it's young Meryl Streep.
It is, in a way. And I think Meryl Streep is not only an actor in this film, but she also played an important role in Amy's speech about marriage, which was not in the original script, but Meryl Streep thought it was important. And after working with Greta Gerwig, Meryl Streep said there needed to be a moment in the film that gave modern audiences a chance to understand how powerless women were in that period about marriage. They couldn't vote, about money. And in some ways, you see Meryl Streep as this character, but she's also this godmother of this story and bringing the idea for modern audiences to understand better what these women were up against. And I think it's important to recognize that not only is she playing a character, but she's also guiding the story in a way. And it's those small little touches, you know, a scene that isn't in the book that I think makes this film so resonant today.
So many of you are connecting to this film and have connected to the book throughout your lives. Judy emailed, as a fourth grade girl, I love the book and I read it several times. My girlfriends and I had Little Women Club where each of us were one of the little women. Of course, I was Joe. The book was reinterpreted over the years to make the girls seem overly domestic and their female roles were not as well defined. This movie puts all that to rest. P.S. I'm 70 years old now. John Horn is here from KPCC. Professor Ann Boyd-Rue is here from the University of New Orleans. And Rachel Handler from Vulture is here. We're going to continue our review of Little Women, including your calls and your reviews. I'm Todd Zwillick. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. Welcome back to 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. We're reviewing Little Women for this month's meeting of the 1A Movie Club. We're speaking with John Horn, host of KPCC's The Frame, Ann Boyd-Rue, English professor at the University of New Orleans and author of Meg, Joe, Beth, and Amy, The Story of Little Women and Why It Still Matters, and also Rachel Handler, staff writer for Vulture. And we'd love to hear from you as well. If you've seen the latest adaptation of Little Women, how many stars? You got a call with your review. Tell us how many stars it gets and why. And we're taking your calls, 855-236-1A1A. You can also comment on our Facebook page. You can tweet us at 1A. We're going to get to some calls in just a moment. Professor Rue, if you're there, I'm interested in when you first connected to this book. Do you remember when it was?
Yes. So I don't have the typical story because I first read the book when I was in my early 20s in graduate school. And I was in graduate school, like a lot of people, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. So when I read the book, it really came at an important time for me. So I wasn't really connecting as much with the girls when they were younger, but in the second half of the book, it resonated so much. And I remember Jo's struggles to be a writer really inspired me. And then at the end of the book, when she says, you know, she's married Professor Bear, and she says she hopes to still write a great book someday. And maybe it will be better for these experiences she's having as, you know, running the school with her husband and being a mother and everything. And that blew me away because nobody else has really talked about that. How, you know, you could combine the two maybe. And she does, Job does become a famous writer in the third volume in the trilogy in Joe's Boys.
Right. Well, she also, Jo, has success at the end of this film, and it's her treatment of seeing her book made, watching it get made, also negotiating her deal at the end of this movie, different from the book and different from other film adaptations, another twist that we're going to talk about. Let's hear from more of you, our 1A listeners, who ran out to see this film and gave us your reviews.
Hi, my name is Patricia, and I'm calling from Tallahassee, Florida. I wanted to give my personal review of Little Women, the newest adaptation. I love Little Women as a story, but I thought the new adaptation fell short. I have a lot of respect for Greta Gerwig and all of the actors in the film, but with the time jumps, that made everything very confusing for people who had not read or seen Little Women before, like my friend who saw the movie with me, and it made it hard for me to feel invested in the characters, even though I know them so well from past adaptations. I didn't like seeing Jo March being lovelorn over Lori. I thought that was a little out of character. And the plot at the end made everything really confusing. It made it so that Jo March was an unreliable narrator, and that's not something I'm used to hearing.
Now, John Horne, let's talk about structure, because one of the things this film does do is jump back between timelines. Joe looking back on her past, Joe in her past, and then ultimately Joe as a success. A lot of it's in the book, but the timeline structure and Greta Gerwig's choices here are very, very different in how the story's told. And there was one person in our inbox who found it all just too confusing.
I don't know if it's confusing, because it is an issue for some people, but it's a deliberate choice. And what it does is it changes a little bit about the agency that the women have. And I think it's important that Greta Gerwig, much like Louisa May Alcott, these women are not objects. They are individuals who make their own choices. Some of their choices are good and some of them are bad. And as you set them 7 years in the future as adults, I think the audience, and I'm talking about myself, I think they have more standing as independent people when the book is framed that way. And I want to come back to something that one of your callers said about the ending of the book, because I think it's important. There's a conversation that Joe has with Mr. Dashwood, the publisher played by Tracy Letts. And basically he says, listen, you can do the story you want to do on these conditions. And this is the ending that you have to have. So when Joe at the end of the movie gets married, that is an invention. That is not what Joe wants to do. That is what Louisa May Alcott, through Joe, is doing for the publisher. So it's important to look at a scene like that as a compromise that is intentional, and that Joe doesn't really believe it. But the way that Greta Gerwig shoots it, it's clear that it's kind of an over-the-top Hollywood ending that isn't authentic. And I think that's an important point to make.
Oh, John Horne, way to set up the clip. Let's listen to Saoirse Ronan speaking to her publisher in Little Women.
Frankly, I don't see why she didn't marry the neighbor.
Well, because the neighbor marries her sister.
Right, right. Well, of course. So, who does she marry?
No one. She doesn't marry either of them.
No. No, 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 that won't work at all.
Well, she says the whole book that she doesn't want to marry.
Who cares? Girls want to see women married, not consistent.
No, it isn't the right ending.
The right ending is the one that sells. Trust me, if you decide to end your delightful book with your heroine a spinster, no one will buy it. It won't be worth printing.
Well, I suppose marriage has always been an economic proposition, even in fiction.
It's romance.
It's mercenary.
Just end it that way, will you?
And indeed she does. Rachel Handler hears Joe confronting the reality. If this character, i.e. you, doesn't get married, nobody's going to buy it.
I mean, I loved that, but I also love the idea that's floating around that there are two separate realities occurring at once at the end. That the sort of Joe publishing her novel and happily looking at it, but kind of by herself holding the book, is one version. And then her with her sisters at the school and Professor Bear is another version. So that's something I've been chewing on. Someone brought that up a couple of days ago online, and I didn't even think of it that way. I thought they were both happening at once, even though I agree that the idea that she was married was sort of an over-the-top fake out. But I'm curious what you guys think about that idea that there are these two possible forks in the road at the end.
Professor Rue, I'm interested in your take on that, on the two forks in the road, and also the split composition of this movie with the two timelines.
Well, I think it's brilliant. And because what she's really interrogating is, you know, this question of how we tell women's stories. This is a movie not just about Little Women, but a movie about how hard it is to tell stories about women's lives. And Greta Gerwig actually said in an interview that we still don't know how to tell stories about women, right? And so she's really confronting the difficulty that Louisa May Alcott had and the difficulty that she's having retelling this story. Louisa May Alcott was sort of pressured. We don't know if it was directly the publisher, but readers were clamoring to know who the girls marry. And Louisa said, as if that were the only end and aim of a woman's life, right? She was very sort of cantankerous about it. But she swore that she wouldn't marry Joe to Laurie to please anyone. So she gave her a very funny match with Professor Bear. So she's subverting readers' expectations, but she's still making a compromise. And I think it's a compromise that readers over the years have been very dissatisfied with. And I really enjoyed the way that I see Greta Gerwig doing at the end of the movie, because she's unraveled all the different threads that make up Little Women, and she's reordered them, right? She's rewoven them in a different way, but she's also added some of Louisa May Alcott into Jo's character. She has her say things that she only says in her letters, for instance, that aren't, you know, Jo in the book. And at the end of the movie, what she does is unravel Jo and Louisa. So I think we see Jo get married, the character, and we see Louisa publish the book.
Mm, indeed. Well, Jo says in that conversation with her publisher, look, marriage has always been an economic proposition, I suppose. So she agrees. She agrees to the ending that he wants for economic considerations, not the only economic consideration in this story. However, I want to go to Diane from Indianapolis, Indiana, on the line, who noticed some other economic issues in Little Women. Diane, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I, like many of your listeners, I'm sure I read this novel at least a dozen times in childhood, and then, as a professor of English, I taught it three or four times in American literature classes. So I'm invested. I think the movie is a very writerly movie. And you know, this isn't just a movie about being women and being sisters. This is a movie about being a writer. And, you know, the fragmentation of time and the playing with memory, that's writer stuff. But what I noticed and what I called about was how it feels to me as if Greta Gerwig is sidestepping some issues of class, that she is, the marches in this movie seem much more bourgeois than the marches in the novel. And that's important, because one of the things that's motivating Jo is not just that she has a story to tell, but she is moved by real economic urgency. I mean, the marches really lived in genteel poverty. They, like the Alcotts, were food insecure sometimes. They struggled to heat their home. So I'm just kind of wondering, I love the movie, but I'm kind of wondering about that directorial decision.
Interesting. A great question, Diane. Let's put it to our experts. So, Professor Rue, what do you think about that critique that Greta Gerwig treats class and poverty much differently in the film than in the book?
Well, I think that's true of all of the adaptations that we've seen of Little Women. They're always wearing pretty dresses. And even though in each of the films, and I think it might happen in this one as well, we see the older sisters wearing dresses earlier in the film that get sort of reused by some of the younger girls later in the film, that kind of thing. So, you know, there's some attempt to indicate that they aren't rich, but, you know, the lavish food, the spread of, you know, even their breakfast that they give away to the Hummels looks pretty damn good. So, I think it's a liberty that the various directors have taken, wanting to show a film that's beautiful because they have such affection for this film. They, you know, they show us the Hummels and their poverty, and that's really shocking to the girls. But the home that they're trying to portray is much more beautiful. And I think the book, though, even does this, right? Because Louisa May Alcott could not write a book that really reflected her own experience. They moved, the Alcotts moved often because they were so in debt they had to escape their creditors. She moved, I think, 20 times before she was 20 years old, or maybe even more than that. You know, they were very, very poor. They almost starved a couple of times. I mean, there's documentation that suggests that, and that she was malnourished for most of her youth. And, you know, it's a story. It's a children's story. And I think that's reflected in the way that they're portrayed on film as well.
We got this email from Andrew, who says, here's a guy's take. Although it wasn't on my reading list growing up, I came from a house of strong women and have enjoyed past versions of this book. This version works best when you've read the story and have some sense of Louisa May's struggles. Shifting back and forth between the world and the book of Louisa May's own took some time to adjust, but once you're there and can see why the happy ending is simply too happy and colorful to be believed, the story really makes sense. Now, Andrew leads his message by saying, here's the guy's take. And Little Women has always been a story written by a woman about women, telling the stories of women. But there has been a thread in discussions of this film since it's popular again that this movie isn't for certain people. Maybe it's not for the guys. I disagree with that because I know how good of a time I had this movie. John Horn, I know you disagree because you're a dude who went to see this movie. Rachel Handler, what about the idea that the dudes wouldn't enjoy this movie because it's not for them?
I mean, it feels obvious to say, but I don't think it's for women. Just like, you know, my entire life I've been growing up watching movies about men. You know, I can't imagine the idea that I would have to not see most of the canon.
Right.
Like, if movies about men were just for men. But I do think it's important. There is a point where, you know, as a woman growing up, you don't see yourself reflected very much on screen. So in that sense, it is important to make note of the fact that it is a story about women told by women that's very important. But I mean, I went to see it with my boyfriend, my dad, my brother. All of us were crying. Everyone was super moved by it. You know what I mean? Like, I almost think that giving sort of oxygen to the idea that this movie is for women, or maybe it's not for men, just creates a problem where there isn't one. I mean, I think it's just sort of a ridiculous notion.
Let's deprive it of oxygen. I went to see this movie. There were lots of guys in the theater. Everybody was giggling and enjoying themselves on the way out. TJ in Lenoir, North Carolina, you saw this movie too as a dude. You want to stamp out the idea that it's not for you?
Oh, I absolutely loved it. And in fact, I saw it without my wife or my kids. They went and saw other movies. I'd heard so many good things about this that I was more than happy to be a single male alone in the movie, and it was great.
Well, and what's your star review, TJ?
Well, it's not one of the all-time greatest movies I've ever seen, but I still give it 5 stars. I actually kept track of the movies I watched last year, and I had it number 2 behind Knives Out, but I loved them both. It was a good end of the year for movies for me.
There's inflation in the review market. TJ acknowledges it's not the greatest of all time, but still gives it 5 stars and leaves Todd Zwillick hanging out by himself at 4.5, seeming like he didn't like it when in fact I loved it. There is definitely some inflation in this market. Rachel, you recently interviewed Gillian Armstrong, director of the 1994 adaptation of Little Women, the one with Winona Ryder that you said you loved so much. You talking about the uphill battle of getting men in Hollywood to take the project seriously, which back then it was a real struggle. What have we learned since the 94 adaptation to today?
In what regard?
Well, what did Gillian Armstrong share with you about her struggles trying to get that film made?
Oh, I see. Yeah. So what was really fascinating about speaking to her, she was very matter of fact about the whole thing, about how she had to there was this big uphill battle. She had a really small budget. A lot of the men at the studio that she was working at thought it was a movie just for women. It was just sort of Christmas fluff. They had no real expectations for it. And then a bunch of executives came in and saw First Cut and left crying. And she felt, you know, very validated by that. But what was really fascinating is that I sort of assumed that would be sort of a horror story for her, right? Like, she has to convince these men that her movie is valid. But she was like, oh, no, this was a dream experience. I can tell you horror stories as a woman director, but this is not one of them. So that was kind of frightening, you know, like this idea that she had to really make a case for her movie being remotely significant, and that wasn't even the worst of it.
Let's go to Jen in Dexter, Michigan, for just a couple of seconds on the phone to get your review. Jen, what did you think? How many stars?
Hi, I give it 5 stars. I absolutely adored it. I am someone who loved the film from the 90s. My whole life, and so I went in a little bit skeptical to this one because I just loved the one from the 90s, but I came out feeling like I really liked how they fleshed out the characters a little more, not particularly Joe. I mean, Joe has always been, you know, the force of the story, but particularly with Amy, I remember feeling like growing up, having seen the 90s movie, that all of a sudden she gets together with Lori and it's just sort of, oh, he always just wanted to be part of the family. Mm. And I liked how with this one, they visited their story a little bit more and told it in a more complex way.
We're definitely going to talk more about the character Amy and the actress who played her after the break, because I absolutely loved that performance. We're talking about Little Women, the latest film adaptation from director Greta Gerwig. We're speaking with John Horn of KPCC, Professor Anne Boyd Rue of the University of New Orleans, and Vulture's Rachel Hunter. More from you, our listeners, your reviews, and our guest take. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's 1A. Thank you. back to the reviews with my guests, Anne Boyd Rue, John Horn, and Rachel Handler. Rachel, maybe we should stop asking everyone if they're an Amy, a Joe, or a Beth, and just ask, look, you're all Joes. Are you a Winona, or are you a Shearsa?
I love that. I mean, it's funny because I watched it with my family, and they kept turning to me during the movie and just looking at me expectantly, like, this is literally your entire life. Like, they were like, did you base your personality on this? I was like, maybe, without realizing it.
Now, speaking of Joe, there's an undeniable take on this movie that a lot of people noticed and a lot of our listeners are noticing as well. Lil Mama Bootstrap tweeted this: Gerwig took that not like other girls trope that is usually applied to Joe's character, and she turned it on its head. If Louisa May Alcott had known terms like non-binary or asexual, we might have had a different book to read. By the way, Lil Mama Bootstrap says 5 stars. And I want to bring us back to that scene where Joe is talking to her publisher and saying, marriage is an economic proposition. Fine, I'll let the character get married, but I never will. You also notice in that scene that there sits Joe wearing a bowler hat, a distinctly masculine piece of haberdashery, especially for the 19th century. And to me, the message was clear. Not only did Joe never marry, but Joe may well indeed have been queer. Professor, what do you think?
I think that's an absolutely legitimate reading. I think it's really interesting how much they emphasized the sort of gender bending of Joe in this production. She takes Laurie's clothes and wears them. She's wearing a vest a lot. She takes his cap off and puts it on herself. And there's this kind of fluidity between the two of them that I think is very accurate to the book. And you didn't see that in the 94 film. They stripped Joe in the 94 film of, you know, her desire to not be a boy, for instance, and the ways that she's rebelling against the conventions of girlhood and womanhood. And that is really the core of Joe. I think it is absolutely fascinating that one of the most popular girl characters ever didn't want to be a girl, right? So I think that speaks volumes to the ways that women have felt uncomfortable with this gender, you know, the sort of the strictures of this gender identity forced upon them. And that's why Joe has been such an icon for generations.
Well, we spend so much time talking about Joe, and rightfully so. We have 3 other Joes in the room, apparently, so it makes it makes some sense. But John Horn, I want to talk about a breakout performance in this film. Yes, Saoirse Ronan, like I said, has that young Meryl Streep energy, and you just can't deny it. But Florence Pugh as Amy, I have never seen her before in any film. Once I saw her performance and the way she took up the screen in this movie, I was so thankful that Greta Gerwig gave her as much screen time as she did. Let's play a clip. Here's Florence Pugh as Amy opposite Laurie, played by Timothée Chalamet.
I've always known I would marry Rich. Why should I be ashamed of that?
It's nothing to be ashamed of, as long as you love him.
Well, I believe we have some power over who we love. It isn't something that just happens to a person.
I think the poets might disagree.
Well, I'm not a poet. I'm just a woman. And as a woman, there's no way for me to make my own money. Not enough to earn a living or to support my family. And if I had my own money, which I don't, that money would belong to my husband the moment we got married. And if we had children, they would be his, not mine. They would be his property. So don't sit there and tell me that marriage isn't an economic proposition, because it is. It may not be for you, but it most certainly is for me.
John Horn, I don't want to say that Florence Pugh stole the show in A Room Full of Joes, because I might get myself in trouble, but between you and me, she kind of did. What a performance.
She's an amazing young actress. She's 24 years old, and I would recommend for people who don't know her work to check out 2 movies. Very different. One is called Lady Macbeth. It's from 2016. And the other movie came out last year. It's called Midsommar. It is a terrifying horror film that she stars in. And Florence Pugh went straight from Midsommar to Little Women. She has a remarkable range. She can play bad. She can play good. And I love that scene. I mean, that's a scene that I think is so critical to the film. And she's bad. I mean, she's somebody who is forceful, and you should never underestimate her as an actor or as a character, because she's that forceful.
Who else wants to give Florence Pugh some props? Rachel, what about you? What'd you think of the performance?
Oh, man. I mean, I'm a huge Florence Pugh hive over here, but I feel like Midsommar is like such a reckless recommendation to make to people who've just seen Little Women.
I know. I'm
sorry. I mean, Midsommar is one of my favorite movies of the whole year. I loved it so much, but it's so intense. But I mean, I love the idea of her running from the Midsommar set to the Little Women set. It's just incredible to me. I mean, never has an actor demonstrated more immediate range than Florence Pugh.
Immediate range, but also range within this film. Look, all of the girls grow up. That's part of Little Women. It's a much more, how can I say, noticeable process with Amy. The range of her maturity is drastic even within this film. So she provides the range, Rachel, even within mm-hmm. the four corners of Little Women.
Definitely. And I'm very impressed with how she managed to play her at different ages, like you said. But I was a little concerned that she was too old to play the young Amy, but I forgot about it immediately. I mean, it's interesting, too, because in the 1994 version, they cast two actors. And in this, it was a little bit, you know, how am I going to believe this 24-year-old woman as a, you know, 12-year-old girl? But she made it work.
She certainly did. Now, John, you got the chance to interview Greta Gerwig recently. Is that right?
I did.
Now, I want to talk about that. I want to hear her talk about some of her choices in this film and hear you reflect on your interview with her. Let's listen to the director herself, Greta Gerwig.
If you read everything through the lens of, well, she had to make it all kind of tidy for the time, then if you just take away the tidiness, what's left is a whole bunch of ambition and mess and anger and lust and craziness and things that don't fit neatly into any box. And so what I wanted to do was not update the text. The text doesn't need updating. I wanted to take away the constraints of the time in some ways, because that's what was interesting to me. And even in those constraints, Louisa really did do her best to try to imagine what would an egalitarian marriage look like? What would something that was not essentially indentured servitude be as a marriage? And I feel that, you know, Gloria Steinem being one of them, but whether Simone de Beauvoir or Patti Smith or Elena Ferrante or J.K. Rowling, there's a long list of women for whom this book meant very specific freedom and ambition. And what I wanted to do was make a film that was in the tradition of why that inspired them.
Here's Greta Gerwig, John Horn, talking about not only her intentions for the breadth of this film, but also I think her use of the timeline jumps to get outside of the linear narrative in the book.
She's so impressive. I mean, she is a very, very talented filmmaker with this movie and Lady Bird. And she also has a very clear vision of the kinds of stories that she wants to tell and how she's going to approach storytelling. And we kind of talked about it a little bit, but the scenes between Joe and Mr. Dashwood are scenes between any woman in Hollywood and any male studio executive. So what Joe is doing at the end of the movie, where she's negotiating her royalties, and it's like, I will do this for you, but you're going to pay, is a conversation that could be happening today in Hollywood about equity and representation and equal access to work. And what Greta is doing as a filmmaker not only stands alone as its own work, but also is key in what's going on in Hollywood. Last year was a record year for Hollywood hiring female directors. We had Greta Gerwig's movie, we had Booksmart, we had Hustlers, we had Queen and Slim, we had The Farewell. A record year, 10.6%.
Yeah, still
of the
dismal.
Jobs went
still
to women.
Dismal. A record
10.6%.
Yeah.
That's a record year. So Greta Gerwig is one of those 10.6%. And the better she does, the better other women can do. So it's not just important to focus on the success of her and Little Women, but about what's changing in Hollywood and what needs to change. And that's why that conversation between Dashwood and Joe at the end of the movie is so important to remember. And it's important to Greta, and that's why it's in the movie.
And interweaved with that conversation between Joe and her publisher Dashwood at the very end of the film is the scene that we already discussed, Joe insisting on her residual, insisting on her deal, making her deal, driving a hard bargain for her future, and then watching her book get bound and made, a directorial compositional choice from Greta Gerwig. Julian from Roanoke, Virginia, I brought you on the line because this scene for you really made the film.
Yes, I thought it was a brilliant touch, a physical putting together the binding of the book, reinforcing the idea that it was her book and just the physicality of the book. We just got to get back reading books. My God, they're beautiful. They smell good.
And they look good. And in this film, they look just beautiful. And Rachel, when you see the book bound in maybe the final scene or one of the final scenes of the film, there is this tangible, beautiful, nice smelling, but economically viable, in fact, economically explosive bomb placed in Joe's hand.
I mean, and to me, there's another layer, too. We're talking about the meta-text of Louisa May Alcott. There's the text of Greta Gerwig. I think she's also telling her own story. Like you said a little bit before, I think this is about her as an artist coming to terms with how to tell her own story of sort of selling her work and deciding to get married, which is something that she, you know, she's been with Noah Baumbach for years and years, and they're engaged, but only now. And so that was another inextricable layer that reminded me. And it reminded me a lot of Lady Bird, too. I think Greta, as a director, always puts herself right there in the movie, and you can see her telling her own story, which makes it, you know, it's extremely moving.
Now, Rachel, you spent some time in Concord, Massachusetts, where
The
movie was filmed on location, the parts of it that are the home scenes of Joe and her family. Tell us about being there and some of the conversations you had with locals. Look, if you're from Concord, you probably get asked about Little Women all the time. I'm from Hershey, Pennsylvania, and everybody wants to talk to me about you know what. So maybe that's what it's like when you're from Concord. What did you hear from the locals when you were there?
Well, I had a delightful day in Concord. I was there for 36 hours during a snowstorm. No one was on the streets. I was walking around by myself, bothering shopkeepers and teenagers, and everyone was so friendly and so funny. I felt like I was in a Nancy Meyers movie. Like, the day just I was like, have I died? Like, it felt so surreal. I don't know. Everybody was – it was very funny because people were either really excited about Meryl and Timothy and telling me these fun little stories like, oh, Meryl ordered the chicken parmesan and it was a takeout and it was crazy to see Meryl Streep on the takeout order. But the funniest part was that everyone kept saying, but what you don't realize is that Chris Evans lives here and he comes in all the time.
Oh.
So everyone wanted to talk to me about Concord resident Chris Evans. So.
Captain America, you mean?
Yeah, it was really, really funny.
Who knew in a movie review about Little Women we'd land on Captain America? That's a place I didn't expect to go.
I mean, it started to become a trope because I would say, tell me, you know, do you have any funny stories about Timothy? They'd say, oh yeah, you know, he smoked in my friend's house and he left the takeout out and he didn't clean it up, but they still liked him. And then they'd be like, but Chris Evans, you know, it was
all
just
right.
Like this hilarious thing. It was so great.
Chris Evans, if you're listening, please send us a voicemail with your review of Little Women. We'll make sure we get it on the air. Professor Anne Boydaroux, we're going to be out of time in a minute, but I want to make sure we end with you. Where do you see the legacy of Little Women going from here? A lot more people will be exposed to it after this new popular film. Do you think the adaptation could change people's exposure to the book, even whether it's taught in more schools?
Well, I certainly hope so. And I think what the movie does, as Greta Gerwig said in that interview, is show us how modern a book it is. And unfortunately, the earlier adaptations focus so much on romance in the 94 film, even though Winona Ryder gets, you know, as Joe gets to publish her book, it's Professor Bear who facilitates getting published. She never has any, you know, discussion with the publisher the way she does in this movie. I think this movie really shows us that Little Women is about themes that we're still, you know, we're still facing, we're still struggling with. And I absolutely hope it's a book that gets taught in schools more and that we're less afraid of what boys will think of the book, because that's why it's not taught very much today, because teachers think, oh, the boys won't want to read it. But I think what this film is showing us is that a lot of men do care and are interested and really need to see this story too, the way we're all raised, you know, reading books about boys. Boys should be raised reading books about girls too.
Mm. John, final thoughts. The Golden Globes were just 2 days ago. There were a couple of nominations for Saoirse Ronan and Alexandre Desplat. No wins at the Golden Globes. Was that a snub? What do we have to look forward to at the Oscars?
We can ignore the Golden Globes. That's my motto in life.
Agreed.
Ignore them. I think this movie is fantastic. I think Saoirse should be nominated for directing it. I think it should be nominated for Best Picture. Greta should be nominated for directing it. Saoirse should be nominated for acting. Florence as well. I think it's a Best Picture contender. Let's hope that it's recognized, because the Academy, like a lot of other voting organizations, does not do a good job in honoring female filmmakers, and Greta Gerwig is as good as anybody behind a camera right now.
Well, I have a message for all you Joes out there, and I know there are a lot of you. There are a lot of you in this room right now. Colleen emailed this. Everyone talks about whether they're a Joe. or a Meg or one of the other sisters, but I see parts of myself in each of them. I think that's why so many women connect to this story. All the female characters, don't forget Marmee, the mom, have different struggles and strengths that reflect aspects that lie within each and every one of us. This movie is the most fun. Everybody listening to me right now, you can love this movie for whatever reasons you want. You can go for the laughs, you can go for the breakout performances, for modern filmmaking of an old story, for authentic storytelling about women from women, as long as you see it. It doesn't matter why. Fellas, tell them I sent you. Go see this movie. John Horn is vice president of the 1A Movie Club, host of KPCC's The Frame, which you can find in your podcast app of choice. John, as always, thank you.
My pleasure.
Professor Anne Boyd-Rue is an English professor at the University of New Orleans. Professor, thanks to you.
Thank you.
And Rachel Handler is staff writer for Vulture. Rachel, thanks to you. Thanks for your trip to Concord. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Remember, we're on Instagram. You can follow us at The 1A Show. This conversation was produced by Catherine Fink. To learn more about her and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. As always, this program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. It is distributed by NPR. I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you so much for being with us for this movie club. As always, this is 1A.